Hello and welcome to Lisp is Clay, a talk where we do things inside of a Lisp-based buffer editor that I cannot get working correctly at the moment. All right, that's close enough to reality. Okay, so, and this was not totally put together at the last minute already. And so it's guaranteed to be a great talk. You can see I anticipated myself screwing up, but not in this particular way. Hi, I'm the executive director of the Sprightly Institute. We do great things, and most of the time it's not as ridiculous as this. So I did some things involving decentralized social networks, which is probably what I'm most well known for. I'm the executive director at the Sprightly Institute, and I am a Lisp lady. So what is the Sprightly Institute? We're a decentralized networking research nonprofit. Maybe I can just look at, I can just edit it like this. This is great, this will work. We're a decentralized networking research nonprofit. We design some damn cool tech. So we have a distributed programming environment called Goblins. We have a distributed programming protocol that is used by Goblins, and called OCaPN, and we have Hoot, a schemed WebAssembly compiler, which will show up several times in the talks in this room, which Dave and Andy both work on. And we're not a game dev shop, but you might think so. And we get this question a lot, which is, why are you using Lisp / Scheme? Because a lot of people seem to think that this is a mistake, actually. They're like, if you're trying to develop the future, you should use something that people actually use. And nobody would use a Lisp / Scheme. Okay, well, this is the one audience I probably don't need to convince. And yet I'm going to try to convince you anyway, but of some specific things that I actually think this is one of the best decisions we actually made. And I'm making this argument that Lisp is Clay. And so what the heck does that mean? Well, I mean, so, you know, it's been around a long time. It's very moldable. You can make all sorts of things with it, like so many different kinds of things. So, like, but what kind of things can you make with clay? Well, you can make a house. You can make a claymation movie, right? You can make bricks, you can make a pottery, you can make a sculpture, and those are pretty interesting things. But one of the interesting things is that you can combine them, so you don't have to choose sculpture versus pottery, right? You don't have to pick between those worlds. You could sculpt your, and then you could make your pottery, and then you can sculpt and adorn features to it, right? You can compose those things together. But one of the other cool things about clay is that you can use clay things to make more clay things, right? You can make bricks, and then you can put those bricks together, and you can make a kiln in which you can make more bricks, right? And so that's pretty cool, right? And we like that type of thing. And this is starting to sound a little bit familiar, right? What is Lisp? It's an ancient medium, right, relative to our field. It's very versatile. It's timeless in a way, right? You know, like it keeps being useful, or so we argue. It's very composable. And it's flexible and expressive, and you can make more of it things with itself, right? You can use Lisp to make more Lisp things, right? And that's, you know, Andy just talked about doing that type of thing, including, you know, and so, like, I think that that's one of the things that's really, those are the characteristics, I think, generally, but what makes it so flexible and powerful? And I think the general assumption people is that it's because of macros, right? You know, homogenicity, right? You know, like the fact that, you know, it's editing the structure that itself. And I think that that's true, but I actually think it kind of gets it backwards. The macros actually come out of the other property that I think is really essential. So is it because of the parentheses? I made this font too big, and now my examples don't work. So now we're going to do another Emacs thing. We're going to switch the slide size by doing this. All right, that's a little bit better. So we're going to do it one more time. I don't think the parentheses are actually particularly essential to Lisp. For example, Arnie's made this nice representation called WISP, which is a white space-based Lisp, right? And this is still Lisp. It's literally the same thing in that it's an S expression-based environment, but it's using indentation to be able to determine. And so the things on the left translate to the things on the right. And this is pretty cool. So the parentheses, which, you know, obviously is the most the biggest selling feature of Lisp when you're like, you know, like, would you like to learn Lisp? And people are like, I don't know. And you're like, look at all these parentheses. And they're like, I'm in, right? You know, so, but it turns out that's not the reason, actually. But it does have to do with the structure. But I think actually even more so, it has to do with uniformity. So get yourself a syntax that can do everything, actually, right? You know, and you know, the in a certain sense, Lisp is actually really powerful because it has a syntax that doesn't matter at all, right? And that makes it matter a lot, which is kind of the paradox of things. So let's pull up some examples of power here. So metacircular evaluators, right? So this is kind of like this. You go through this phase where you're learning Scheme, and we wrote or in Lisp, right? So who here has read the Scheme primer for the Sprightly Institute put up? Okay, you know, a number of people. So we wrote out this, we put this document out that's like a intro to Scheme. Guile thankfully has it like on the front. You know, if you click Docs, it's like the first recommended thing now. And it's, you know, 30 pages that basically goes you from I don't know anything about programming to you write a version of Scheme inside of Scheme in 30 pages, right? And this is like a thing that's very, like, that like is kind of an old trick, right? Like it's basically that whole paper is just like, let me just take all the parts that I thought were good about, you know, little schemer and structure and interpretation and computer programs, and then just like ran you through it, right? And what's it's amazing is that the implementation of Scheme in Scheme, well, it's not really all of Scheme, but it's like close enough that you can technically it's you can do all of the computational power of Scheme, right? And it's really just 30 lines of code, right? That's it. We just wrote our like Scheme in Scheme. Now, you know, is it really Scheme in Scheme? Nobody's going to actually completely use this thing. There's a wonderful talk by William Byrd, who worked on Minicanron, where it called the most beautiful program ever written. If you want to see a good Lisp talk as opposed to this helter-skelter, I'm barely getting Emacs to work talk, I really recommend watching that one. And what's really interesting is he says, you know, like if you take a look at this thing, you know, like and you have this, the cool thing is that you can just change a little piece of it, and then you get a completely different language, right? So, okay, cool, we implemented Scheme and Scheme, why does that matter? But we can just change like one or two things, and suddenly we get a logic programming language. Where, right, you know, like you can ask a question and get the answer as opposed to like saying what to do, right? Which is pretty cool, right? And getting to this part where you get the heart of the program, right, the heart of the concept of computation, it's really great. And the thing is that you can do this in other languages. There is a port of structure and interpretation of computer programs, the old Scheme Wizard book classic, right, to Python. And the goal of this was to try to be able to make its ideas more accessible. I read through it, and I think the problem is that it didn't, when you get to the part, which I think was a really strong part about the book, you know, SICP introduces, you know, at one point Sussman said, you know, I gave some, like we spent half an hour teaching people the language, and then we spend the rest of the course teaching people about the ideas of programming, right? When you get to the part where you're writing this interpreter, it looks like you're trying to force a Lisp into something that doesn't look like it anymore, right? So this is where the homoiconicity thing, I think, is true. It looks like you're writing the thing that's actually the thing that you're dealing with, right? And I think that this is the thing that the fact that it's kind of a syntax that kind of doesn't matter, right? Because it's just this very simple thing is actually really powerful here, and it lets us be able to get very meta about things, right? And of course, you can do smarter things. You can not just write an interpreter. You could write an actual compiler and stuff like that. I still think that this kind of magic trick of the metacircular evaluator is reflective of the aspects of computation that we're able to kind of see and hold in our hands. I didn't pull up a bunch of Minicanron examples here, but I actually would really recommend looking at some of William Byrd's stuff, partly because when I was trying to pull it up, I feel like I'm not very good at like pulling up examples that are easy to understand in a couple lines. But what's interesting is that Minicanron, it's like prologue basically that you can do in Scheme. But what's interesting is that if you go to the Minikanron website, they have it ported to a bunch of other languages, and it kind of doesn't really like look good in like a lot of other languages. Like it doesn't look good, and it's kind of like, well, why doesn't it look good? And part of the reason is that because Lisp has so few opinions about how things should look, when you embed a different programming paradigm inside of it, it still looks like the same, you know, bunch of mud, right? You know, like we've effectively, that's what clay is. It's mud that you can do cool things with, right? And this whole line of Lisp is clay is actually a riff off of a popular old phrase, which is in the Lisp community, which is that Lisp is a ball of mud. And this goes all the way back to like MIT, where they're like, there's this debate about Algol, right? You know, the number one language today, right? Which like this beautiful language with these very specific syntax in it and stuff like that. And they're like, well, it's like a diamond. It's a beautiful language. But like, if you try to add a diamond to another diamond, you can't, right? But you can always add more mud on top of a ball of mud. So Lisp is a ball of mud, right? So we have this, but I feel like mud is really kind of like, you know, devaluing things here. And one of the really cool things I think about Lisp is, you know, we have QuasiQuote, right, which is this templating system. And, you know, here is, so if you saw the talk that Jessica and I gave yesterday about, you may have heard that there was a first implementation of ActivityPub to be able to pass the test suite was written in Guile, actually, in Scheme. I wrote it, you know, to be able to make sure that, like, the ideas worked. And it had some cool ideas. Like, for example, right here it says define AS method. That means activity streams method. Now, this is a macro that's specific because I wrote a generic method system that understood the activity streams type hierarchy, which is the vocabulary that ActivityPub talks to each other. And it would basically like look at the type hierarchy, kind of like if you've used Goops or Clos or something else like that, how it knows about the type hierarchy, and you can write these generic methods. And so it was basically like that, so that I could write these functions so that, you know, you could process incoming activities. So if somebody favorites something, you can run the right logic. If somebody telling you that they created something, you can run the right logic. And this one's saying, you know, like this is a template for the HTML representation. And so it's saying, okay, well here, this is coming up in your feed, and it says you created something. So this person created something. They're telling you that they created it. Well, what you should do is you should create this div. And this is, you know, HTML effectively. But it's HTML that just looks like the same mud we make everything else out of in Lisp, right? And we have this template where we backquote. And the commas are where you move out of the data mode, and you move into like execution mode. So, you know, it can pull things out of the activity streams thing. And I think there's a couple of cool things about this. One of them is that, you know, it wasn't difficult for me to extend the language to add a generic method system that was specific to ActivityPub, right? I could do that really easy. It didn't take me long at all, right? And the other cool thing is that I'm writing HTML, I didn't need to use like Jinja 2 or Django's templating language or something else like that. I didn't have to leave Scheme. And that's one of the things that I thought was really nice about it, right? And it was really fun to work on this project. And like this would get more complicated if you're creating a method for you have the create on the outside, but you want to render something like a video thing on the inside. Well, you know, then I define an activity streams method for a video thing. And this opens up with a let expression that does a lot more complicated things, as in terms of pulling out, you know, like this list and everything, and then it's saying, okay, I want to get these source lists, and it walks through the information from the activity stream structure, and then at the end, you know, it kind of composes it together, and it does this back quote, and it builds up some XML again. But there's SXML up here too, and it can just kind of compose these things together. So here we don't have to be like in Python. If I'm wanting to move between this world where I have the HTML templating area and the Python logic, right, I have to kind of like step into one world and then step out and then step in and step out, because they're two different languages that don't really talk at the perimeter very well, right? I don't have to do that here. And like, and this quasi-quote thing, which Lisp has had for effectively ever, turns out to be good enough to be able to do this type of thing. So SXML, since I didn't explain what it is, it's an XML templating system for S expressions, the parenthetical expressions. And it's great, right? By the way, this is just a fun side note. You can have these tombstone objects if things are deleted. I thought that PubStrait had the funniest version of this because they had an AsciArt thing where it would put a grave that said Tomb of the Unknown Activity Streams object. But it would also use a templating thing to actually grab out the year and then dump it right in there of when the thing died. But you don't know when it was created. Effectively, all you care about is that it's death, right? This object has been deleted, right? And so that type of thing's pretty cool. All right, now to piss off anybody who's a fan of Nix in the room, because I'm going to talk about why Geeks is better. So Nix has this whole template. It has this whole a special language for writing package definitions, right? And it's like in a lot of other worlds, when you're not in Lisp, the first thing people say when they're like, okay, I'm going to solve a problem, I'm going to create a domain-specific language, the first thing I want to do is I really want to think about what's the syntax look like, right? And I'm like, I hate that. I don't want to do that. I want just the same garbage I use for everything else. And so there's a special syntax. I have to learn a new syntax now. I don't want to do that. I'm way too lazy. But one of the other really, the thing that I really do not like about Nix is that it combines multiple domain-specific languages into the same file. It's kind of like if you HTML did this too, right? And now nobody does it anymore, almost. But you can have an HTML page that has JavaScript and CSS embedded in the same places. And it's gross. You like move into this place where it's doing one language and moves out, and move back in and move back out, right? And I don't like it. And so here we have the same thing where we're defining things in this declarative way. And then suddenly we're writing bash, right? You know, like we're writing bourne shell. And it's like, I don't like this. So like, here's the delicious thing that happens in Geeks is like, I go over here and I hit tab, expand this out, and it's like, oh, okay, here's some package. And then when we get to the part where it's gonna like do some logic, it's the same frickin' thing I do everywhere else. It's just the parentheses, but it also composes together. And this is one of the big things, I think. Composition between languages is essential.